Healthy is a condition, healthful is a property. Vegetables aren't healthy, they're dead. No food is healthy unless you have an eggplant that's doing push-ups. Push-ups are healthful. There is no such thing or word as kudo. Kudos, K-U-D-O-S, is a singular noun meaning praise, and it is properly pronounced kudos. There is also a plural form spelled the same, but pronounced kudos. Please stop telling me so-and-so picked up another kudo today. Here's another one that bothers me. When they say race, creed, or color, that's wrong. Race and color, as used in that phrase, describe the same property. And creed is a stilted, outmoded way of saying religion. Leave this tired phrase alone. It has lost its usefulness. Besides, it reeks of insincerity, no matter who uses it. As of yet is simply stupid. As yet, I've seen no progress on this one, but of course I'm speaking as of now. Here's one you can win some money on in a bar if you're within reach of the right reference book. Chomping at the bit and old stomping ground are incorrect. Some Saturday afternoon when you're getting bombed on your old stamping ground, you'll be champing at the bit to use this one. Sorry to sound so picky, folks, but I listen to a lot of radio and TV, and these things have bothered me for a long time. Join the George Carlin Book Club. We've got books out the ass. Call now. Here are some titles you'll receive. Where to Go for a Free Fuck. Eat, Run, Stay Fit, and Die Anyway. You Give Me 6 Weeks, and I'll Give You Some Bad Disease. Why You Should Never Mambo with a Policeman. The Stains in Your Shorts Can Indicate Your Future. Earn Big Money While Sitting in Your Car Trunk. Where to Take a Short Woman. I Give Up Hope and It Worked Just Fine. Why You Should Never Yodel During an Electrical Storm. Fill Your Life with Croutons. 6 Ways to Screw Up Before Breakfast. I Suck, You Suck. Reorganizing Your Pockets. Where to Hide a Really Big Snot. Why You Must Never Give Yourself a Neck Operation. The Wrong Underwear Can Kill. Now You Can Cure Cancer by Simply Washing Up. Lightweight summer ensembles to wear on the toilet. Why No One Should Be Allowed Out Anymore. A complete list of people who are not making progress. Where to Throw Up Secretly. 10 things no one can handle at all. And why you should not sit for more than 6 weeks in your own filth. Call now. I dread the deaths of certain super celebrities. Not because I care about them, but because of all this shit I have to endure on television when one of them dies, all those tributes and retrospectives, and the bigger the personality, the worse it is. For instance, imagine the crap we'll have to endure on TV when Bob Hope dies. First of all, they'll show clips from all his old road movies with Bing Crosby, and you can bet that some news anchor asshole will turn to the pile of clothing next to him and say, "Well, Tammy, I guess Bob's on the road to heaven now." Then there'll be clips of all those funny costumes he wore on his TV specials, including the hippie sketch, where they'll show him saying, "Far out, man, far out." They'll show him golfing with dead presidents, kissing blonde bombshells, and entertaining troops in every war since we beat the shit out of the Peloponnesians. And at some point, a 70-year-old veteran will choke up and say, "I just missed seeing him at Iwo Jima, 'cause I got my legs blowed off. He's quite a guy." Ex-presidents, including the dead ones, will line up four abreast to tell us what a great American he was. Show business perennials will desert golf courses from Palm Springs to OJ's lawn to lament sadly as how this time Bob hooked one into the woods. And regarding his talent, a short comedian in a checkered hat will speak reverently about Hope's incredible timing. And this stuff will be on every single newscast day and night for a week. There'll be special one-hour salutes on Good Morning America, The Today Show, and CBS This Morning. Ted Koppel will ask Henry Kissinger if it's true Bob Hope actually shortened some of our wars by telling jokes close to the front lines. CNN will do a series of expanded Showbiz Todays. One of the cable channels will do a one-week marathon of his movies. And it goes without saying that NBC will put together a 3-hour primetime special called Thanks for the Memories. But at the last minute, they'll realize Bob Hope's audience skews older, and they'll sell it to CBS. Then there'll be the funeral, carried live on the Dead Celebrity Channel, with thousands of grotesque, acne-ridden fans seeking autographs from all the show business clowns who dug out their best black golfing outfits to attend, quote, one of the hottest burials to hit this town in decades, Variety. And all this shit will go on for weeks and weeks and weeks until Milton Berle dies, and then it'll start all over again. I dare not even contemplate Ronald Reagan. Another thing that bothers me in speech these days, the pre-epidemic, P-R-E, pre-board, pre-screen, pre-record, pre-taped, pre-existing, pre-order, pre-plan, pre-test, pre-condition, pre-register. In nearly all of these cases, you can drop the pre and not change the meaning of the word. They say the suicide film was not pre-screened by the school. No, of course not. It was screened. You can call and pre-qualify for a loan over the phone. Your loan is pre-approved. Well, if my loan is approved before I call, then no approval is necessary. The loan is simply available. There are many popular beliefs that are rooted in familiar expressions and sayings, and many of them simply aren't true. Everything comes in threes. Not true. In reality, everything comes in ones. Sometimes, when three ones come in a row, it seems like everything comes in threes. And by the way, in medieval times, it was widely believed that everything came in 26s. They were wrong, too. It just took them longer to recognize a pattern. People say when you die, you can't take it with you. Well, that depends on what it is. If it's your dark blue suit, you can certainly take it with you. In fact, not only can you take it with you, you can probably put some things in the pockets. You learn something new every day. Actually, you learn something old every day. Just because you just learned it doesn't mean it's new. Other people already knew it. Columbus is a good example of this. The sky's the limit. Well, how can the sky be the limit? The sky never ends. What kind of a limit is that? The earth is the limit. You dig a hole, and what do you keep getting? More earth. The earth's the limit. You get what you pay for. Clearly, this is not true. Have you been shopping lately? Only a naive person would believe that you get what you pay for. In point of fact, if you check your purchases carefully, you'll find that you get whatever they feel like giving you. And if corporations get any more powerful, you soon might not even get that. Tomorrow is another day. Not true. Today is another day. We have no idea what tomorrow is going to be. It might turn out to be another day, but we can't be sure. If it happens, I'll be the first to say so. But you know what? By that time, it'll be today again. Nice guys finish last. Not true. Studies have shown that on the average, nice guys finish third in a field of six. Actually, short guys finish last. By the way, in medieval times, it was widely believed that nice guys finished 26th. You can see how limited those people were. If you've seen one, you've seen them all. Do we even have to talk about this one? This should be obvious. If you've seen one, you've seen one. If you've seen them all, then you've seen them all. I don't understand how this one even got started. Those were the days. Now, those were the nights. Think back. Weren't the nights better? Days you had to work. Nights you went to parties, danced, drank, got laid. Those were the nights. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Well, what about when you eat at home? I don't pay when I eat lunch at home. It's free. Sometimes I'll leave a tip, but basically it's a free lunch. Yeah, I know we had to buy the food at the store, but as the Zen Buddhists say, the food is not the lunch. You pays your money and you takes your choice. Well, I think what I said earlier still applies here. You pays your money and you takes whatever they jolly well give you. Actually, when you get right down to it, you pays your money and you loses your money. Everybody has his price. Not so. Would you believe there are millions of people who do not have their price? Thanks to a government mix-up, many people have their neighbor's price. They don't make them like they used to. Actually, they do make them like they used to. They just don't sell them anymore. They make them, and they keep them. Two wrongs don't make a right. Well, it just so happens that two wrongs do make a right. Not only that, but as the number of wrongs increases, the whole thing goes up exponentially, so that while two wrongs make one right and four wrongs make two rights, it actually takes 16 wrongs to make three rights and 256 wrongs to make four rights. Seems to me that anyone who is stringing together more than 256 wrongs needs counseling, not mathematics. If it's not one thing, it's another. Not always. Sometimes if it's not one thing, not only is it not another, but it turns out to be something else altogether. You can't win them all. Not true. Believe it or not, there's a man in Illinois who so far has won them all. But don't get too excited. It has also been discovered that under certain circumstances it is possible to lose them all. By the way, there's no record of anyone having tied them all. You can't have it both ways. Well, that depends on how intimately you know the other person. Maybe you can't have it both ways at once, but if you've got a little time, you can probably have it six or seven ways. Things have to get better. They can't get any worse. This is an example of truly faulty logic. Just because things can't get any worse is no reason to believe they have to get better. They might just stay the same. And by the way, who says things can't get any worse? For many people, things get worse and worse and worse. Nobody ever said life was fair. Not so. I specifically remember, as I was growing up, at least 12 different people telling me life was fair. One person put it this way: "Life, you'll find, is fair, George." Oddly enough, all 12 of those people died before the age of 27. It takes two to tango. Sounds good, but simple reasoning will reveal that actually it takes only one to tango. It takes two to tango together, maybe, but one person is certainly capable of tangoing on his own. By the way, in medieval times, it was widely believed that it took 26 to tango. There's a sucker born every minute, and two to take him. Well, this may have been true in the past, but now, if you adjust for the increased population base, birth control, and the so-called moral decline, not only are there 5 suckers born every minute, there are now 53 to take him. Life is short. Sorry, life is not short. It's just that since everything else lasts so long, mountains, rivers, stars, planets, life seems short. Actually, life lasts just about the right amount of time, until you die. Death, on the other hand, is short. What you don't know won't hurt you. Why don't we just ask Abe Lincoln and John Kennedy about this one? A few more oxymorons. Mandatory options. Mutual differences. Non-dairy creamer, open secret, resident alien, silent alarm, sports sedan, wireless cable, mercy killing, lethal assistance, business ethics, friendly fire, genuine veneer, full-time daycare, death benefits, holy war. I'm going to give you 15 rules to live by, because life is not as difficult as people think. All you need is a good set of rules. Since it's probably too late for you, here are some guidelines to pass along to your children. Number 1, relax and take it easy. Don't get caught up in hollow conceits such as doing something with your life. Such twaddle is outmoded and a sure formula for disappointment. Number 2, whatever it is you pursue, try to do it just well enough to remain in the middle third of the field. Keep your thoughts and ideas to yourself and don't ask questions. Remember, the squeaky wheel is the first one to be replaced. Number 3, size people up quickly and develop rigid attitudes based on your first impression. If you try to delve deeper and get to know people, you're asking for trouble. Number 4, don't fall for that superstitious nonsense about treating people the way you would like to be treated. It's a transparently narcissistic approach and may be the sign of a weak mind. Number 5, spend as much time as you can pleasing and impressing others, even if it makes you unhappy. Pay special attention to shallow manipulators who can do you the most harm. Remember, in the overall scheme, you count for very little. 6, Surround yourself with inferiors and losers. Not only will you look good by comparison, but they will look up to you, and that will make you feel better. Number 7. Don't buy into the sentimental notion that everyone has shortcomings. It's the surest way of undermining yourself. Remember, the really best people have no defects. If you're not perfect, something is wrong. 8. If by some off chance you do detect a few faults in yourself, first, accept the fact that you are probably deeply flawed. Then make a list of your faults and dwell on them. Carry the list around and try to think of things to add. Blame yourself for everything. Number 9. Beware of intuition and gut instincts. They are completely unreliable. Instead, develop preconceived notions and don't waver unless someone tells you to. Then change your mind and adopt their point of view, but only if they seem to know what they're talking about. Number 10. Never give up on an idea simply because it is bad and doesn't work. Cling to it, even when it is hopeless. Anyone can cut and run, but it takes a very special person to stay with something that is stupid and harmful. 11. Always remember, today doesn't count. Trying to make something out of today only robs you of precious time that could be spent daydreaming or resting up. Number 12. Try to dwell on the past. Think of all the mistakes you've made, and how much better it would be if you hadn't made them. Think of what you should have done, and blame yourself for not doing so. And don't go easy. Be really hard on yourself. 13. If by chance you make a fresh mistake, especially a costly one, try to repeat it a few times so you become familiar with it and can do it easily in the future. Write it down. Put it with that list of your faults. 14. Beware also of the dangerous trap of looking ahead. It will only get you in trouble. Instead, try to drift along from day to day in a meandering fashion. Don't get sidetracked with some foolish plan. 15. And finally, enjoy yourself all the time and do whatever you want. Don't be seduced by that mindless chatter going around about responsibility. That's exactly the sort of thing that can ruin your life. In the privacy of your own home. As opposed to what? The privacy of someone else's home? You have no privacy in someone else's home. That's why you got your own home. Down the pike. He was the meanest guy ever to come down the pike. Fine. But what about guys who come up the pike? Not everyone lives north of the pike. Some guys have to come up the pike, and they're really mean because nobody mentions them at all. And what about a guy who doesn't even use the pike? He arrives on Amtrak. Boy, was the meanest guy ever to arrive on Amtrak. Doesn't sound right, does it? Like a bat out of hell. We say some guy was going like a bat out of hell. Well, how do we know how fast a bat would leave hell? Maybe he would leave real slowly. In fact, why should we assume that a bat would even want to leave hell? Maybe he likes it there. Maybe hell is just right for a bat. Maybe it's bat heaven. And now that we're on this subject, how do we know hell has bats in the first place? What would a bat be doing in hell? Usually a bat is in the belfry. Why would he want to split his time between two places? Then again, maybe that's why he's in such a hurry to leave hell. He's due back at the belfry. And why do we say out like a light? The primary function of a light is to be lit, not to be out. Why choose a light to represent the concept of being out? Why not on like a light? The same is true of dropping like flies. The wrong quality is being emphasized. Flies are known for flying, not dropping. And let's forget meteoric rise. Meteors don't rise. They fall. You can talk until you're blue in the face. Well, you can't talk until you're blue in the face. In order to talk, you need oxygen. Blueness of the face is caused by a lack of oxygen. So if you're blue in the face, you probably stopped talking a long time ago. You might be making some gestures. In fact, if you're running out of oxygen, I would imagine you're making quite a number of gestures, and rather flamboyant ones at that. When we point out someone's lack of popularity, especially a politician's, we sometimes say, he couldn't get elected dog catcher. Well, first of all, since when do they elect dog catchers? I've never seen one on the ballot, have you? The last time you were in the voting booth, did it say president, vice president, dog catcher? No. And why do they imply that getting elected dog catcher would be easy? I think it would be hard. A lot of people have dogs. They wouldn't vote for you. And many of the people who don't have dogs still like them. I should think it would be quite difficult to get elected dog catcher. One thing leads to another. Not always. Sometimes one thing leads to the same thing. Ask an addict. The pen is mightier than the sword, needs to be changed, needs to be updated. It's overdue. It should have been changed much earlier in the 20th century to "the typewriter is mightier than the machine gun." But at this point it should probably read "the word processor is mightier than the particle beam weapon." Unidentified person. Well, what exactly is an unidentified person? Doesn't everyone have an identity? Maybe they mean he's a person they can't identify, but that would make him an unidentifiable person. I guess if nothing else, he could always be referred to as "that guy we can't identify." Open a can of worms. Well, why would you have to open it? Are there really sealed cans of worms? Who sealed them? Worms are usually put in a can after it has been opened and emptied of something else, like corn or pumpkin meat. Uncover a can of worms, maybe, but not open. Wild and woolly. Whenever I hear something described as wild and woolly, I always wonder where the woolly part comes in. Wild, I understand. But woolly? I have some sweaters that are woolly, but they're kind of conservative. They're not wild at all. In the wrong place at the wrong time. How can this be? Shouldn't it be in the right place at the wrong time? If a guy gets hit by a stray bullet, he's in the right place, where his day's activities have taken him, at the wrong time, when a bullet is passing by. If it were the wrong place, the bullet wouldn't have been there. Here's another. In the right place at the right time. That's also questionable. Let's say a guy wins a prize for being a bank's millionth customer. All you really have to say is he was in the right place. After all, it had to be the right time. That's the only time they were giving away the prize. If it hadn't been the right time, it wouldn't have been the right place. 20 minutes later, the bank wouldn't be the right place anymore. You never know. Not true. Sometimes you know. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. Implies that rocket scientists are somehow smart. Well, how smart can they be? They build machines that travel thousands of miles to drop fire and radiation on people. That doesn't sound smart to me. The oldest trick in the book. Sometimes in the movies, when the bad guy is holding a gun on the good guy says, "It won't work, Scarfelli. My men are right behind you with their guns drawn." And the bad guy says, "You can't fool me, Murdoch. That's the oldest trick in the book." Well, exactly what book are these guys talking about? Have you ever seen a book with a bunch of tricks in it? Magic tricks, maybe, but I don't think the thing with the guns would be in there, do you? A prostitute might have a book of tricks, but once again, probably no mention of the two guys with the guns. And anyway, even if there really were a book with a lot of tricks in it, how would you know which trick was the oldest? They were all printed at the same time. You'd have to say, "You can't fool me, Murdoch. That's the trick that appears earliest in the book." But I guess that's not good movie dialogue, is it? When they say someone is not going to win any popularity contests, what popularity contests are they talking about? I've never heard of these contests. Where do they have them? And who wins? Whoever is winning these popularity contests can't be all that popular. You never hear about them. You could hear a pin drop. Well, you can't hear a pin drop. Not even a bowling pin. When a pin is dropping, it's just floating through the air. There's very little noise. You might be able to hear a pin land, but certainly not drop. Here are some more of my favorite redundant expressions. Total abstinence. Subject matter. Honest truth. Join together. General public, harbinger of things to come, new initiative, audible gasp, advance warning, execution-style killing, future plans, gather together, Jewish synagogue, lag behind, manual dexterity, occasional irregularity, outer rim, plan ahead, basic fundamentals, first time ever, personal friend, and shrug one's shoulders. I call this peace on you. I'm not disturbed by war. To me, it's more like entertainment. War may be a lot of things, but it's never a bad show. It's the original greatest show on earth. Otherwise, why would they call it a theater of war? I love it. And as far as I'm concerned, the show must go on. But I realize there are some people who really worry about this kind of thing. And so, as a good citizen, I offer two ideas for peace. It's the least I can do. Many people work on war plans. Not too many work on peace plans. They even have a war college at Fort McNair, Washington. They call it the National Defense University. But it's a war college. They don't have a peace college. And they have war plans for every contingency, no matter how remote. If Easter Island gives us some crap tomorrow, we have a plan and a computer that tells us exactly how to thoroughly bomb the shit out of Easter Island. You name the country, we've got the plan. Chad, Myanmar, Upper Volta, Burkina Faso, Liechtenstein. Just give us some crap, and we'll come there and bomb the shit out of you, because we've got a plan. Well, so do I. Two of them. George's plans for peace. My first plan is worldwide, year-round, non-stop folk dancing. In short, everyone in the world would be required to dance all the time. It leaves very little time for fighting, and what combat does occur is inefficient because the combatants are constantly in motion. When it was suggested that this plan might be impractical, I offered an alternative, wherein only half the people would be dancing at any given time. The problem with this was the distinct possibility that while half the people were dancing, the other half would be robbing their homes. So now I've stripped it down to a symbolic plan. 24-hour, non-stop, worldwide folk dancing once a year. Each year, on a designated day, everyone in the world would stop what they were doing and dance for 24 hours, non-stop. Any kind of dancing you want. Square dance, minuet, grind, Peabody, cakewalk, mazurka, samba, mashed potato, doesn't matter. Just get out there and dance. Even hospital patients, shut-ins, cripples, and people on life support. If you're too sick to dance, you just die. While the doctors and nurses keep dancing, wouldn't this be a good way to weed out the weaker people? Dance or die. Natural selection with a beat. One good result, of course, would be that during the actual dancing, no fighting could take place. But the plan would also tend to reduce violence during the remainder of the year, because for 6 months following the dance, everyone would be talking about how much fun they had had, and for the 6 months after that, they would all be busy planning what to wear to next year's dance. Another plan I have is world peace through formal introductions. The idea is that everyone in the world would be required to meet everyone else in the world formally at least once. You'd have to look the person in the eye, shake hands, repeat their name, and try to remember one outstanding physical characteristic. My theory is if you knew everyone in the world personally, you'd be less inclined to fight them in a war.
Who? The Malaysians? Are you kidding? I know those people.
The biggest problem with compulsory worldwide formal introductions would be logistics. How would it work? Would you line up everyone in the world single file and have one person at a time move down the line, meeting all the others? And then when they finish, they get on the end of the line and the next person starts? Or would you divide everyone into two long lines and have them move past each other laterally? That seems inefficient because for at least part of the time, each line would have a large number of people with nothing to do. And also, once you finish the first pass, everyone would still have to meet the people in their own line. Either way, it would take a long time. In fact, children would be born during the introductions, and then you'd have to meet them too. And it's probably important to remember that because of their longer names, some nationalities would move through the lines more slowly than others. Russians, for example. Russian names tend to be long. If you've ever bought an ID bracelet for a Russian person, you know what I mean. The engraving alone can run you over $200. I'm afraid the Russians would move through the line very slowly. Vladimir Denisovich Zhirinovsky, this is Yevgeny Vasily Arbatov. Yevgeny Vasily Arbatov, meet Vladimir Denisovich Zhirinovsky. Major delay. On the other hand, the Chinese tend to have short names. Qin Lu, Wuhan, Wuhan, Qin Lu. Bing! See you later, moving right along, which is why there are so many Chinese people. Less time saying hello, more time to fuck. Peace on you, but only if you really deserve it. I call this watch your mouth. It has to do with the way people speak. I'm easily annoyed by people's speech habits, and I regard certain words and phrases as warnings to break off contact immediately. In the interest of maintaining good mental health, I try to avoid the following people. Those who can't resist saying, "God forbid," every time they mention the possibility of an accident or death, even though they don't believe in God. People who say, "God rest his soul," following the mention of a dead person, even if they hated the person and don't believe in God. These are the same ones who say, "Knock wood," and really mean it. Sometimes they'll even glance around half-heartedly for something to knock on before giving up and just standing there like the morons they are. And speaking of morons, can't we somehow prevent adults from using words like tushy, boo-boo, and no-no when speaking to grown-ups? Why don't we just send these people to their rooms without supper? Tell them there's not going to be any yummy in their tummy. And while we're at it, let's include all those colorful risk-takers who actually use heck and darn for emphasis. What the fuck is this, 1850? I also think we'd be better off if we could eliminate anyone who has a can-do attitude, or is referred to as take charge, all business, or no nonsense. Have these people sedated. And let's include the ones who describe themselves as goal-oriented. Please, leave me alone. And then there's those people who tell you, "I'm a people person. I'm a people person." "Oh, yeah? Me too. Fuck people." And what about these guys who have no job and they say to you, "Are they keeping you busy?" I happen to resent even the assumption that there are people who have the authority to keep me busy. Least of all do I appreciate it from some guy who doesn't seem to have a whole lot to do himself. And let's punish every homely man who ever thought it was clever to say, "I'm not just another pretty face." And I think it's time to start slapping around these people who can't tell a simple story without repeatedly saying, "You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?" Here I am trying to listen to the guy, and he's a person who is constantly checking on how he's doing. Blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? No, no. The question is not, do I know what you're saying? The question is, do you know what you're saying? You follow me on that? I'm also getting tired of arguably. It's weak. It tries to have things both ways. Take a stand. And here are some jock sports fan adjectives that ought to be outlawed. Listening to a sports call-in radio station for about an hour, you will be amazed at the number of times you hear the following words. Incredible. Unbelievable. Tremendous. Outstanding. Big. Huge. It was huge, dude. Large. Major. Key. Do these guys sound like maybe someone's penis size is on their minds? I can also do without people who tell me that something, anything, is either the name of the game or what it's all about. That's what it's all about, man. That's what it's all about. Hey, that's the name of the game. Oh, it is, huh? Well, fuck you. And let's lose these guys who think it's cute to say ouch when someone delivers a small put-down. There's another strain of speaker that I try to avoid, the pretentious and arrogant person, people who refer to themselves as yours truly. What kind of grandiose crap is this? Some of them even speak of themselves in the third person. Athletes and entertainers are big on this demented shit. I'm going to do what's right for Leon Spinks. I think people like this are mentally ill, and you can include those very special people who use the royal we. I also instantly dismiss anyone who tells me that some other person has class, is classy, or is a class act, the last of these being the most arrogant. What these speakers are telling you is that since they are among the few people who recognize class, it is their obligation to point it out to sorry-ass folks like you. If you manage to listen to them just a little longer, you'll find that they're completely full of shit. And this is the same type of person who uses the word tasty when referring to music. The previous reference to class is of the same order of arrogance as the phrases not too shabby, he's no dummy, I give him high marks, he's got his head on straight, and he really showed me something. All of these phrases reek of presumed superiority. And just when I thought all those precious twerps were about to stop saying not to worry, and by the by, along came, "What say you?" And at the end of the day, to deepen my suffering, at the end of the day is probably the most pretentious expression to come along since the moi chow crowd descended on us. And just a tad has a phony ring to it. So does just a skosh. Speak English! And be on the alert for anyone who tells you that something they did was life-affirming. Ugh. Some celebrity said he quit doing his TV show because it stopped being life-affirming. Hey, skeezix, when you finish affirming your life, get over here and give my dick a couple of jerks. And can't we figure out something evil to do to these people who call themselves survivors? Such self-regard. I'm a survivor. Good. We'll be sure to tell everyone at your funeral that you're a fucking survivor. And this one is almost too easy. Guys who can't leave a room without saying, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. You know what I say to them? Good. Stay the fuck out of here. There are also certain reckless people in this country who are abusing ongoing and early on. Leave these terms alone, please. They mark you as a counterfeit. Early on has faux poetic aspirations, and ongoing has only a very narrow area where it is distinctly appropriate. And some of these ongoing felons are the same ones who have vandalized the phrase, even as we speak. First, they shortened it to, as we speak. Then they started using it every 4 minutes or so. Even as I write this, my pissed-offedness is ongoing. And fuck all the asshole people who say, God bless, and then don't bother to complete the sentence. Who are they? I haven't the slightest. But if I were God, I would not honor such a request. Anyway, enjoy. You know, some people talk about reincarnation, and I suppose it would be nice if reincarnation were a reality, but I have problems with the mathematics. At some point, originally, there must have been a time when there were only two human beings, don't you think? And they both died, and presumably their souls were reincarnated into two other bodies. But that still leaves us with only two souls. We now have nearly 6 billion people on the planet. Where are all the extra souls coming from? Is someone printing up souls? Wouldn't that tend to lower their value? I want to tell you a little about myself. I'm 63, that's 17 Celsius, but I've never told you much about my childhood. And listen, I was unusual even before I was born. During pregnancy, my mother carried me very low. In fact, for the last 6 weeks, my feet were sticking out. She was the only woman in the neighborhood who had maternity shoes, but she told me I was a big help when it came to climbing stairs. And I was a healthy baby, except I have one ear that's a little folded and bent. The doctor said it happened because apparently at the precise moment I was being conceived, my mother and father fell off the hood of the car. My parents chose what at that time was the very latest method of childbirth. You've heard of Lamaze? This was La Paz. The mother receives powerful narcotics, the father is sent to Bolivia, and the nurse does all the screaming. Soon as I was born, I noticed babies have it pretty easy. Wake up, cry, piss, roll over, drool, suck, eat, gag, belch, puke, giggle, crap, crawl, stand, fall, cry, scream, bleed, coo, sleep, and dream. I went through the usual stages, imp, rascal, scallywag, whippersnapper, and of course after that, it's just a small step to full-blown sociopath. I'm probably the only child who went directly from shenanigans to crimes against nature. I was always a little different. Most kids had a dog named Spot. You know what I called my dog? Stain. Different. Instead of my thumb, I sucked my ring finger. And I had a strange ambition. I just wanted to live longer than Jesus. My mother said it was because I was sensitive, so she washed me in woolite. And I was a hip kid. Oh, when I saw Bambi, it was the midnight show. My cap gun had a silencer. My lemonade stand had dance hostesses. And one night at dinner, when I was about 10, I leaned over to my father and I said, "Hey, man, when are we going to load up on some of that breast milk again?" Still, I was practical. When one of my playmates died in an accident, I asked his mother if I could have his toys. As a boy, I was negatively affected by two things. First of all, I grew up on the side of a very steep hill, and I think that can throw you off a little. And here's another thing. When you look at a map lying on a table, north is usually the direction pointing away from you, but my front door faced south. So as you can see, as soon as I left my house, everything was backwards. Things like that have an effect. There's one other thing I should mention. You know how when you're real little, your dad throws you up in the air and catches you? Well, one day my dad threw me up in the air, and I went so high I could see the curvature of the earth.
I believe I even caught a glimpse of Sri Lanka. At the time, of course, it was still called Ceylon. Anyway, after he threw me up in the air, he didn't wait around. He walked away. They said after that I was never really the same. They would whisper, "The boy's no longer playing with a full bag of jacks." What happened was I became a loner. I just wanted to be by myself. I had an imaginary friend, but I didn't bother with him. Fuck him. Let him get his own friends. I got no time for people like that. When you're a loner, of course, you have to make up your own games. Tag is difficult. I used to play cop, and instead of hide and seek, I would play a pathetic little game called hide. One time I remained hidden for over a month before I realized that no one was looking for me. It was sad, really, but there are compensations. To this day, I remain unchallenged at musical chair. My mother would say, "Why are you always playing alone?" And I would say, "I'm not playing, Ma, I'm fucking serious." They first noticed I was strange when I insisted on listening to the circus on the radio. I guess I was a bad boy. Besides shitting in my pants, I would also shit in other people's pants. Eventually, she sent me to a child psychologist. It was all the vogue at the time. So I went, and I honestly believe he was crazier than I was. I should have stabbed him many times in the eyes with a railroad spike while I still had the chance. I consider it a lost opportunity. One problem was that my mother was very strict, and on top of that, she was a physically imposing woman. Thinking back, the person she most reminds me of is Charles Kuralt. I didn't really like her, you know. I remember staring at the orphanage and feeling envy. Of course, it wasn't all bad. I have some pleasant memories, too. Every Sunday after church, my mother and I would buy the Sunday papers and walk home together, and then she'd get drunk and try to make pancakes. In a way, I take all the blame, though. I was hard to handle, and it wasn't easy on her. As I said, I'm 63 now, and she still isn't over postpartum depression. Yet she's a typical mom. She still thinks I'm going to be tall. And you know something? Her wish is coming true, because she's getting smaller. Soon I will be, too. I guess the thing I miss most about childhood is riding piggyback. And here's something I don't tell too many people. I still like to ride piggyback occasionally. I really do. And I don't mean across the room. I'm talking about long trips. I went to Florida last winter, piggyback. Fortunately, I have very indulgent friends, and I pay top dollar. Why are there no recreational drugs taken in suppository form? A tree. First you chop it down, then you chop it up. If a painting can be forged well enough to fool experts, why is the original so valuable? Why does it always take longer to go somewhere than it does to come back? If you can't beat them, arrange to have them beaten. No one ever mentions when the swallows leave Capistrano. What, do they just die there? And how do we know it's the same swallows every year? The swallows know that on March 19th, the tourists come back to Capistrano. We have mileage, yardage, and footage. Why don't we have inchage? They say, let's stop underage drinking before it starts. Please explain that to me. Sounds tricky. The news story said someone had overcome a fatal disease. Wow. I put a dollar in one of those change machines. Nothing changed. Now that the year 2000 is here, I hope the crime of the century happens real soon, so I get to read about it. They say if you outlaw guns, only outlaws will have guns. Well, shit, those are precisely the people who need them. I once found a throw rug in a catch basin. One of the best expressions in the English language is, "Who says so?" I guarantee, if you keep saying, "Who says so?" long enough, sooner or later, someone will take you into custody. Beethoven was so hard of hearing, he thought he was a painter. I went to the Missing Persons Bureau. No one was there. Meow means woof in cat. When primitive people practice the rain dance, does it rain at the end of the practice? And if it doesn't, how do they know they did the dance correctly?
If you live to be 100, your lucky number goes up by 1. Amy Vanderbilt, the foremost authority on etiquette, committed suicide and apparently didn't have the courtesy to leave a note. They keep saying you can't compare apples and oranges. I can. An apple is red and distinctly non-spherical. An orange is orange and nearly spherical. So what's the big problem? After a flood, where do all the rowboats go? When Popeye blows through his pipe, why doesn't he get sprayed with burning ash? George Washington's brother was the uncle of our country. If you fall asleep on the couch in a house where a woman is present, there will be a blanket or a coat covering you when you awaken. When blowing out your birthday candles, suppose you wish for one candle to stay lit. Is it possible for your wish to come true? The day after tomorrow is the third day of the rest of your life. Why must hailstones always be the size of something else? And if it must be that way, why don't they have hailstones the size of testicles? I often think how different the world would have been if Hitler had not been turned down when he applied to art school. So far, the Ku Klux Klan has not produced any really great composers. You know, when you look at some of Picasso's paintings, makes you wonder what kind of woman he visualized when he masturbated. You know, we use the sun to make electricity, and then we use the electricity to operate sun lamps and tanning machines. Prefix has no suffix, but suffix has a prefix. If a really stupid person becomes senile, how can you tell? I read somewhere that in the last census, 1.6% of the people were not counted. How can they know that? What exactly is viewer discretion? If viewers had discretion, most television shows would not be on the air. Remember, inside every silver lining, there's a dark cloud. Dogs lead a nice life. You never see a dog with a wristwatch. What exactly is mid-air? Is there some other part of air besides the mid part? I'd like to live in a country where the official motto was, "You never know." It would help me relax. The reason they call it the American dream is because you have to be asleep to believe it. It goes without saying that I'm not the only person who has noticed this, but I never got to spell it out my way before. Comedy's nature has two sides. Everybody wants a good time and a couple of laughs, and of course the comic wants to be known as a real funny guy. But the language of comedy is fairly grim and violent. It's filled with punchlines and gags and slapstick. After all, what does a comic worry most about? Dying. He doesn't want to die. Geez, I was dying. It was like death out there, like a morgue. I really bombed. Comics don't want to die, and they don't want to bomb. They want to go over with a bang and be a real smash. And if everything works out, they're successful and they make you laugh, they can say, "I killed them. I slaughtered those people. I knocked them dead." And what phrases do we use when we talk about the comic? "He's a riot, a real scream, a rib-splitting knee-slapper, my sides hurt, my cheeks ache, he broke me up, cracked me up, slayed me, fractured me, he had me in stitches, I busted a gut, I get a real kick out of that guy. Laugh? I thought I'd die." Well, that's about it, folks. I hope you enjoyed hearing my book. Going home now and write my second book. If you'd like to come over to the house and listen to me type, you're perfectly welcome to do so.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.